Blog Talk Radio.
Love is like candy on a shelf. You want to taste and help yourself. The sweetest things are there for you. Help yourself, take a few. That's what I want you to do. We're always told repeatedly, the very best in life is free. And if you want to prove it's true, baby, I'm telling you, this is what you should do. Just help yourself to my lips, to my arms. Just say the word and they are yours. Just help yourself to the love in my heart. Your smile has opened up the door.
Radio show is for mature audiences only. That means, boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
Many folk in contemporary society tend to view discussions about dating and relationships as a mere afterthought, a conversation that is many times thought to be regarded as simply a source of entertaining debate and or gossip, but not the basis for a more meaningful examination of where one's life has journeyed, where one's life has excelled, stalled, or regressed. But when you really think about it, what affects your attitude towards the opposite gender as you make your transition to adulthood more profoundly than the interaction you observe between your mother and father as a youngster, or in some cases, the lack thereof? Let's be real, folks. If you're a woman, you soaked in the nuances of your father's behavior, his character, his integrity, and most importantly, the manner in which he treated your mother. Similarly, if you're a man, no male-female relationship ever really helps you define such terms as love, loyalty, trust, and dependability more than the usually unbreakable bond between a mother and her son. So are you still one of those cynics who says conversations about dating are nothing more than a trivial afterthought meant for a small talk at a holiday get-together? My guest for the evening believes that the parent-child relationship influences and impacts your thoughts, ideas, beliefs, and attitudes towards the opposite sex and dating rituals in general like no other. In his book, and more prominently in his title, he employs the use of metaphorical language that just about any red-blooded American woman can relate to: the very lustful desire for chocolate. There is arguably no single food in our culture that tends to be lightheartedly connected with a sense of love and even a sense of eroticism like the passionate desire for chocolate. One author says that the key to a woman's success in the ever-so-challenging world of dating starts with her ability in her adolescent years to gain a sense of self-control and self-discipline towards her love for the powerful allure of chocolate. Who is this interesting gentleman who uses various forms of chocolate throughout his book to represent the factors that are most influential to our romantic ideals? His name is Anthony Miner. And even though the true day to celebrate the love of chocolate is approximately 3 months in front of us, Mr. Miner has chosen tonight to get up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Is this the Alan Roger Curry of
load one thing. Oh my God,
you're really good at this.
I gotta ask you, do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and marry someone in a race? You do?
I think they do. I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how did you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them.
When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life.
You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect the woman. Never disrespect your woman, but the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do something stupid.
I think it's a turn-on because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo, yo, mode one. This is Gerard McClendon from Chicago Tonight and the McClendon Report. Right now you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend, Alan Roger Curry. Mode one, let the women know, fellas, what you're really thinking. Ha ha, Alan Roger Curry.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. We're on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and I'm your host, Alan Roger Curry. And today is Thursday, November 13th, and if you love the smooth, sweet taste of chocolate, then tonight's show is definitely for you. My guest for the evening is the author of the book, If You Like Chocolate, Eat Chocolate. Learn to manage your desire for chocolate. You and I know the vast majority of women out there love them some chocolate. Not saying that men don't, but women really, really, really love them some chocolate. So I'm going to enjoy this interview. But before I get to my interview with the guest for the evening, I want to plug a few of my upcoming episodes. Next week, I will have on my show celebrity stand-up comedian. He's been on BT Comic View. He's been on Saturday Night Live. He's a relationship columnist for Essence Magazine. His name is Finesse Mitchell, and his book is entitled Your Girlfriends Only Know So Much, A Brother's Take on Dating and Mating for Sisters. I believe this episode is going to be similar to my interview with Hill Harper, Anthony and Melanie Clark, and a few others. In other words, it's going to be off the chain. Again, that will be next week, Thursday, November 20th. And then coming up next month in December, I got a few guests lined up. One's name is Miss Talia, I hope I pronounced that right, Talia Stovall. She's written a book entitled Crossing the Threshold. Crossing the Threshold. And that's a book that basically centers around the concept that we as men and women tend to attract those to us that are similar to us. In other words, if we're selfish, we tend to attract selfish people. If we're super kinky, we tend to attract super kinky people, and so on and so on. So that's going to be an interesting interview next month. Then I have Dr. Susan Block from HBO's Real Sex. She's a hoot. I'm sure that'll be an off-the-chain conversation. And also a well-known guy in what's called the seduction community. He's an attraction and seduction guru known as Carlos Zuma. Carlos Zuma. He will be on my show next month in December. As I always do, I got to give some shout-outs in the chat room. I have my younger cousin, Christopher Curry, otherwise known as Hype Style. That's right, Hype Style's in the chat room. I got Music Nika. Music Nika, my main man from Montreal, Canada. Metal Haze is in the chat room. I have the lovely, sexy, ultra-articulate Miss Wendy K is in the chat room. Miss Wendy K, real talk, real people. And another name I can't pronounce, but anyway, I'm sure people will be easing on in the chat room. I'm glad to have you. And let me give some other kudos while I'm at it. First, many thanks to the co-founders of Blog Talk Radio, CEO Mr. Alan Levy, Chief Operating Officer Mr. Bob Cherish, Blog Talk Radio executive staff, which includes but is not limited to Mr. John Sweet, Ms. Hillary Lee Wong, my broham, ace confidant, Stephen Curry, my cousin, Chicago, J.P. Jones, at the bar in Maplewood, New Jersey, my boys, Jeff Kenton, Corey Pullman, Maurice Taylor, my ace dogs, all of my fellow Blog Talk Radio family, which includes but is not limited to the Loveologists, Kathy Holloway Hill, Kevin Ross, Andre and Ambra, and just way too many more quality hosts to mention at this time. If you get a chance, listeners, please check out the weekly lineup of the high-quality talk shows available for you to listen to on Blog Talk Radio. Whenever you, any day you come on there, just click on Air Now, and it'll give you a lineup of all the shows that are available for you to listen to. If there's an interest you have, there's a show on this network for you to listen to. If your interest is shining shoes, then somebody got a show about shining shoes, and it's just a lot of people on here. If you ever want to download my archive shows, my previous shows, you can either download them from my Blog Talk Radio page, or you can download them from iTunes. iTunes, Alan Roger Curry. Put in Alan Roger Curry. You can download my shows from iTunes. Those are all my past episodes. And please do so. Please do so. Now, I don't get this. Before the election, they couldn't get Sarah Palin to have a press conference. Now, she's just talking her little ass all over the place. What? Please tell me, listeners, what is up with that, man? I'm tired of her running her mouth. She's just everywhere, just running her mouth. We don't want to hear from you now, you know? You was on the losing team. It's like Chris Rock said on David Letterman at 10, she lost. She lost. Why is she running her mouth now? She lost. Sarah Palin, go home. Take care of it. Shoot a moose or something. You know, I don't want to hear about you no more. I'm tired of reading about Sarah Palin said this, Sarah Palin said that. Now, speaking of top running their mouth, Kanye West, did you read where Kanye West said that he is the voice of this generation? He said, what's up, Sassy Entertainment in my chat room? Sassy, that's my girl. You heard her voice in the opening intro, and she gets a lot of comments on what she said. I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people. That's Sassy with the sexy voice. But, yeah, what I'm saying, Kanye West, he says he's the voice of the new generation, the voice of the new generation. He said he will go down in history as the Michael Jordan of rap music. See, somebody needs to get Kanye a clue. You let other people say that for you. You don't say things like that about yourself. You know, that's what people in the media for them to say, I think Kanye West will go down on record as the Michael Jordan. No. You don't say that about yourself. It makes you look like you're full of yourself. Just a little tidbit to Mr. Kanye West. Did you hear about Mariah Carey? She went on a 3-day trip and took like about 25 suitcases. Come on now. Speaking of interviews, didn't she say in an interview a long time ago that she was not a diva? But you take like 20 suitcases on a 3-day trip? Who needs 20 suitcases on a 3-day trip? Please, please tell me. Even models who are going to be changing clothes every 5 minutes don't need 20 suitcases for a 3-day trip. And, you know, there's been all this talk about the economy. And here's my tip on improving the economy. Please, please, anybody listening, work in these service industries, this is Alan Roger Curry's tip for improving the economy. Get rid of all these hidden charges. I'm tired of opening a bill and seeing in this fine print that's like 1/100th of an inch, and it says, you know, if you don't cancel by the 30th, you know, we're going to charge you an extra $100. I've been on the phone last couple months just cursing people out because they've been adding stuff on my services and stuff. I didn't ask for these services. And they say, Mr. Curry, now if you want to look on page 13 of your bill, you would have saw that if you didn't write us an email or call us by the 13th of the month, we get to add on an extra $150 worth of charges to your service. Quit doing that. Quit doing it. That's why my personal economy is jacked up. Because you adding on all these charges, the phone company, my cable TV company, all y'all. I'm talking about all y'all. You're adding on these little charges in this little itty bitty print. And then all of a sudden my bill just gets jacked up. So quit doing that. That's how you improve the economy. And the car makers, just give away the cars for free. Don't be trying to get money from the government. Just sell them cars at half price. I take it. And my final tidbit of the day, I read this article. Kind of weirded me out here. Now, my show is about dating and relationships. And we talk about sex and seduction and all that. But I read this article that says that there's supposed to be some similarities between mice and rats having sex and human beings having sex. Okay, check this out. Who wants to watch a bunch of mice and rats boning? That's what I want to know. That's just what I want to know. Who wants to watch a bunch of mice and rats boning?
Alan, you're stupid.
Seriously, you know, these people call themselves researchers and wearing lab coats, and they in some lab watching mice and rats boning, man. I don't want no similarities to mice or rat boning. Who sits there for 2 hours? Man, go get you a good quality porno movie, man. Don't be watching no mice and rats and comparing them to you. Ain't no similarities between no human beings having sex and some mice and rats boning. Get the heck. But one thing we know about mice and rats, you know, I'm the king of the Segway. They love to eat chocolate. They love to eat anything that's food. So let me get to my introduction, my guest for the evening. He is a native of Chicago, Illinois, my neck of the woods, and he is a seasoned veteran of both the entertainment industry as well as the beauty and physical self-improvement industry. He's worked all over Hollywood and Beverly Hills, and he is lifelong study of human nature provoked him to share his unique philosophies on relationships as a non-conventional relationship coach. After noticing that the advice he was giving to men and women resulted in almost instantaneous improvements in their relationships, he decided to sit down, write a book, and the rest is history. I've spoken with the guy. He has a very interesting, you got to pick up his book because it's just a very interesting concept he has going on there. It's a very interesting concept, and I can't wait to talk to him. So on behalf of Blog Talk Radio and Upfront and Straightforward listeners, give it up for my guest for the evening. His name is Anthony Miner. Yeah. What's happening, Anthony?
How you doing, Ellen? How you doing, man?
Oh, man, I'm doing cool, man. Now, see, I know you're probably tripping out, too, hearing about people sitting in rooms watching mice and rats boning, man.
Yeah, and I was more tripping out about the Kanye West thing.
Oh, man, yeah, man. This is what, if you're a celebrity, this is why you hire a publicist.
Exactly.
You know, because it's their job to brag on you. You don't go around yourself saying, I'm the voice of the generation, and I'm going to go down as the Michael Jordan of rap music. I think he just loves to bring attention to himself, though. I think it's all a ploy. He just wants to get more attention to himself. What you think?
Yeah, I don't think he's the greatest. I think he's good. I don't know if he's the greatest. I would bring, like, Tupac maybe up in that category or Biggie as the greatest. But I think he's great, but I don't know if he's the greatest. So I personally would never say that about myself, you know, unless I just am like phenomenal. Unless I was Obama or something, you know what I mean? I'm the greatest. But even then, I don't think I would. So no.
Well, you know, I have to give one guy an exception. Muhammad Ali, we all know, he had a history of, you know, kind of tooting his own horn. But I don't know, there was something about him. He was so lovable that it just didn't come across as offensive, you know.
Yeah, but he ranked up at the top 1% of boxers, man. You know what I mean? He would just say he was phenomenal, you know what I mean, for what his style, the way he brought. He was just a very unique kind of a fighter, boxer, you know. So is Kanye that class? I don't know. Is he Michael Jordan? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, we're going to leave Kanye alone. We're going to quit picking on him. And I'm going to get to asking you a question, Anthony.
Sure.
What events, circumstances, or observations in your life provoked you to sit down and write this book? I mean, what made your creative mind come up with all these entertaining chocolate analogies?
Well, you know, honestly, I've written two books prior to this, none of which were published. And the first one, when I finished it, I didn't like it. I go, man, I couldn't stand behind my own book that I wrote, right? And then the second book, I just didn't feel I wrote it as articulate and concise as I wanted to be. So I go, okay, it's not ready. And I went back and wrote this book. But what provoked me to write books on relationships in general, which this is about, was just really my experiences with relationships because of where I was raised. I was raised in Hyde Park. I don't know if you know.
Hyde Park. Yeah, that's the affluent area. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Okay, so in that area, that's where Obama lives, you know, of course. And,
now look at you bragging. I see you tooting your horn.
I'm calling you
Kanye.
No. Yeah, right.
No, I'm messing with you. Go ahead, bro.
The point is that in that world that I lived in, you were taught to do the right things, which is you go to college. And if you didn't go to college, the people look at you like, you know, you didn't go to college. It's like it was almost shameful if you didn't make it to college, right? Mm-hmm. And but because of the area, what it is. And so I thought I did all the right things. And then I got into the dating world, and I presented all the right things that I thought were the right things. But I found that my girl, not me, literally my girl, but my girl was attracted to the guy whose pants were down, his bound by his butt, his head is crooked. I'm like, wait a minute. I was told to do all the right things to get that girl, but she's looking at this guy who has nothing. So I go, wait a minute. This doesn't make sense. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of really spent about 10 years really kind of just studying human nature, reading a lot of books on behavior and things like that. And then once I kind of figured it all out, at least in my opinion, I figured it out, then I was able to write this book.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, let me ask you the most obvious question. Do you have a daughter?
No, I don't.
You don't? Okay.
I do not have a daughter.
Okay, now, I know a lot of your book deals with the, you know, father-daughter relationships as well as the mother-son. What gave you insight to write about the father-daughter relationship?
Well, the book that I wrote prior was a book specifically for men.
Okay.
The one I wrote prior to this one.
Okay. And what was that called again?
Men, which is, what's that?
What was the book before this one called?
It was called East of Venus, meaning men are east of women. You know, women are from Mars, men are from Venus. So
okay,
gotcha. Okay. And so I had to figure out, like, I had to understand me, I had to figure out, like, what is about women, the women that attract you to these kind of guys?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, and plus in the world I'm in, I'm around a lot of women. My occupation is a hairstylist. I work in television and film. So I spend a lot of time with women. And in order for me to be a better, you know, boyfriend or whatever, I had to understand understand women better. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. So while you was doing these women hair, like what's his name? Warren Beatty in Shampoo. Did you see Warren Beatty in the movie Shampoo?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, where he was a hairstylist, and he was that gave him the insight on women, and he was this major womanizer, and that was an entertaining movie. But anyway, so you kind of listened to women's conversation, both with you and with other women. You kind of picked up on a lot of things, huh?
Right. It wasn't just sitting there listening. I probed because I want to know what is about this guy that made you attractive, I just really studied it, honestly. It wasn't just doing hair and hear some girl tell me a story about her boyfriend. What I thought was really kind of interesting as I did hair, especially in the beginning, was that I'll see a woman, she goes, so you're married. Yeah, yeah, or I'm engaged, I have a boyfriend. Yeah, you know, okay, I'm doing a hair. But it is by the time I get done with the hair, she's saying, oh, yeah, but I've been cheating on him. I was like, what? You know what I mean? So I find it was, like, really interesting about how women really behaved, which I was a little naive about because, like I said, the way I was raised and things like that, you know.
Now, would you say your book is geared more towards the female reader, or do you think men would enjoy the contents of your book just as much as women?
I think women enjoy more than men. I think men would understand it and appreciate it. But I think it's really geared specifically towards women.
Okay.
I think that, yeah, I just find that women like it a lot. Women actually love the book. Once they read it, they really like it. And you have to be ready to really make choices when you read my book. If you don't, then you go, oh, no, because it's about making choices. It's not judgmental. The book just lays it out there, you know, like, you know what I mean? Because it's non-judgmental type of that time as a person. And, like, for example, there was a girl that I worked on a show with, Deal or No Deal, right, that TV show. And she was telling me about her boyfriend. Oh, my boyfriend, he takes my car, and every time he takes my car, he gets a parking ticket. You know, I get 20 a month. So I go, she goes, what should I do? I go, well, do you think the guy's going to get parking tickets in 5 years from now? She goes, yeah. I go, well, about 10 years from now? She goes, yeah. So I go, well, listen, make a choice. Either get a part-time job and pay for those extra parking tickets, or you need to, like, move on. Because he is who he is. He's not going to change. She just admitted that he's not going to change.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm feeling that. Now, what's interesting, I read an outline of your book, and you use some very interesting metaphors, analogies, of course, with the chocolate. Almost every chapter has something related to chocolate, and we'll get into it. Now, let me ask you, first, correct me if I'm wrong. In your book, the term salad represents those men in relationships that people feel are good for a woman, healthy for a woman, but those men in relationships don't have the same lust appeal as the allure of chocolate, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're taught, or women are told, you know, you need salad, eat salad, it's good for you. You know, and women kind of, I don't like to use this word, but they do end up settling for salad, especially to get a little older, you know. But I don't think they get that butterfly feeling when they see him. They go, wow, he's a good person, and he's going to provide for me. He won't be doing things like that. But at the bottom line, I don't think that's really the guy that gets her all that, you know, worked up. As chocolate does. You know, chocolate, we love chocolate.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. I know some women, boy, shoot, man. They'll lay in bed with a box of chocolate before they will a brother, man. Shoot.
Yeah,
but,
right.
But, yeah, how that chocolate represents, I know what you're saying, is because, you know, we like what we like.
Right.
And
see, the
and I can tell that was the essence of your book is that, hey, you know, you could say chocolate is junk food or it might give you teeth cavities, but as men and women, we like what we like. And,
right. Here's the thing about society is it's like, you got shows, and I'm not – no disrespect to these shows because I do watch them and pay attention, but let's say like the Oprah show or Dr. Phil show or different shows that deal with relationships issues, they always kind of push people to a direction of being normal, right? And you feel – when you watch the shows, you walk away, look at your relationship and say, well, my relationship is not normal or my relationship is not healthy. And the truth of the matter is Oprah and her relationship is no less healthier than yours or Dr. Phil's and Robin's relationship. But if my point was this, I go, wait a minute. We all look what we like. I mean, I like, you know, a certain type of blue jeans. If you look at my house, anything in my house is what I like, as it is in your house, whatever. So how's it different when it comes to relationships? It doesn't. It's the same thing. It's the same thing, right? You like what you like. You like a blue car. You like a blonde girl. You like, you know, a red, whatever, coffee, whatever. So
see,
my book is saying that we like what we like, you know.
My listeners know on the show, in chat room, I want y'all to respond. See, if you don't know this, Anthony, my loyal listeners know, I love me some chicken wings, man.
Right.
See, I might come out with my book that if you like chicken wings,
eat chicken wings.
Learn to manage your desire for chicken wings. Because a brother sitting here, love him some chicken. Dude, I'll fight anybody. I'll fight your mama for my chicken wings, man. Nobody better ever, ever, ever not mess with me. Now, people tell me, they say, Alan, those are not healthy. And Alan, you know, they got a lot of grease. I don't care. We all got to go out some way. If I go out choking on a chicken wing, then that's how I'm going out. But, yeah, I like chicken wings. You cannot force me to eat salad.
But here's the thing, though. Like, okay, for example, chocolate. Chocolate's that guy, that bad boy that most girls are attracted to, right? And salad is the guy that most girls ignore. And the way a girl knows she's with chocolate versus salad or salad versus chocolate is that when she says to her girlfriend, I like Bob, but I don't know, he's a little boring.
Mm-hmm.
That's salad across the board. You know what I mean? That's a sign that she's with salad. But when it comes to chocolate, the question is not so much whether she likes chocolate or not like chocolate, because you like what you like. The question is, like, how do you manage that guy that you're attracted to? Do you know what I mean? You can like whatever you want to like. It's like chicken wings. You love chicken wings. But the question is, like, how do you manage those chicken wings in terms of your diet? You can eat chicken wings to your blue in the face, but you have to know, like, if I eat too many, do I get sick? Do I get fat? Do I do whatever the case might be?
A large part of your general advice in the book is not so much to avoid your lustful desires, but simply to learn how to manage those desires in a manner that will prevent you from experiencing regrettable repercussions, correct?
Correct. Because no matter what I say to you, because everybody tells everybody, don't settle, you can do better. That's what every girlfriend tells the other girlfriend when they're in a relationship with with chocolate. Don't settle. He's an a-hole, whatever, right? The truth is, that's what she likes. I'm not here to change what you like, and I don't think you can change somebody's taste for anything, right? So I'm saying, listen, that's what you like it, love it, but learn how to manage it, because if you learn how to manage it, you won't – see, what happens is women have the expectation that chocolate – once she has that chocolate, they want it to behave like salad. He didn't call me. He didn't do this. He didn't do that. With salad, them kind of guys, they'll call you on your birthday, take you out on your birthday, do all those things that she wanted to have happen, but you're not that attracted to them. So that becomes a conflict, because you want your chocolate to behave like salad.
Yep, because we like what we like. I like chicken wings. Also, when it comes to women, one thing I like that kind of goes against the grain, at least for some people, I love women who are verbally kinky. Man, if a woman verbally kinky, man, she just got my attention. I cannot date a woman that's a verbal prude.
Right.
You know? And but yeah, that's what struck me when I was reading is that it's just so true that we all like. I'm gonna use that phrase a lot tonight. That we like what we like, you know, and nobody really outside of us can tell us what we like. We know what we like.
About the situation? The irony of it all, the girlfriend that's advising the other girlfriend, don't settle, you could do better, she likes what she likes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Or your mother, or whoever said, don't do that. So it's like me telling you, hey, don't eat those chicken wings. I mean, what I like, though, but you tell me your chicken wings. It just doesn't work.
Now, let me give a quick note to my listeners, both in the chat room and otherwise. If you have a – that's right, Adrian. I see you in the chat room. You know I don't like verbal. For you, of all people, know I don't like verbal. And you have to excuse me. Sometimes I had this interplay with people in my chat room.
Because
I have two groups of listeners. I have the non-chat room listeners. Then I have my chat room listeners. And my friend Adrian's in there teasing me about my term verbal prude. But, yeah, I like women who are
ultra – where's
your chat
room at?
Huh?
Where's your chat room?
Where chat room? If you were to go to my Blog Talk Radio page, there would be a link that you click on, and then it'll take you into my chat room. It'll take you a couple of seconds. Sometimes it's slow, but it gets you into my chat room. And that way, people, the advantage of the chat room is that people can, like, say, ask me a question to ask you, and, you know, they kind of sometimes have their own conversation going on about things you might say during the interview. And so it just gives the show an interactive element. Which is real cool. I was about probably 1/4 of my listeners who listen to my show are chat room listeners. And then I have some people, they just straight listen to the show. They don't go into the chat room. But anyway, what I was going to say to my listeners is if you have a question or comment, call 646-478-5710, 646-478-5710. If you have a question or comment for my guest for the evening, Anthony Miner, he is the author of the book, If You Like Chocolate, Eat Chocolate. I almost want to say go ahead and eat chocolate. If you like chocolate,
go ahead
and eat chocolate. Learn to manage your desire for chocolate. We're going to come right back in about 3 minutes or so. I'm going to let Anthony get a swig of water. And right now we're going to take our first intermission break of the evening. But don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Dangerous Lee. When you aren't being upfront and straightforward with my man Alan Roger Curry, you should definitely be keeping it dangerous with me and HP every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern by listening to Ask Dangerously Live right here on Block Talk Radio. Simply direct your computer to AskDangerously.com for your weekly dose of danger. And if you can't get enough of me on Friday nights, join me at MySpace.com/DangerousLee.
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry of Upfront and Straightforward and Mode 1 fame. And if you're a music lover, I urge you to listen to Madison Media Radio. It's not just music, but it is music with a purpose. Right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Celebrating 25 years of the countdown.
25 years of the countdown.
With Walt Baby Love.
Live in our countdown studios, ladies and gentlemen, a personal friend of mine, Mr. Stevie Wonder. Now live with me on the countdown hotline, it's Justin Timberlake. Live with me in our countdown studios, my friend, Tina Marie. Welcome, Tina. On the countdown hotline, live, Eric Benet, as promised, my friend, Kirk Franklin. As promised, it's Natalie Cole. As promised, y'all, Kenneth Babyface Edmonds. As promised, John Legend. As promised, live on my countdown hotline, Alan Roger Curry. Welcome, Alan.
The old to the new to the old. The old to the new to the old.
Only for the grown and sexy.
The grown and sexy.
The countdown with Walt Baby Love.
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry, and I want to quickly invite you to join me on Thursday, November 20th, when I have former BET Comic View and Saturday Night Live regular, as well as Essence Magazine dating columnist, Finesse Mitchell. He will join me to discuss the all-important question, who gives better dating advice, men or women? Again, that is Thursday, November 20th, on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network. We now return to my interview with entertainment industry veteran and book author Anthony Miner on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. My guest for tonight is Anthony Miner. He is the author of the popular book called If You Like Chocolate, Eat Chocolate, Learn to Manage Your Desire for Chocolate. I want to give a shout-out to a couple new people in the chat room. Got Gina, a.k.a. Holistic Life Designs, and Robin. Got Robin of the Tailored Edge, and Scott Gordon in there acting up. But, Anthony, I want to ask you, do you believe that a man's relationship with his mother and, more importantly, a woman's relationship with her father eventually forms the basis for how that woman views men, the ideas of dating and or marriage and male-female relationships? Hello, hello. Wait, hold on a second, Anthony. I'm having some technical difficulties because I cannot hear you at all. Hold on one second. Anthony, you there?
Yeah, you hear me?
Okay, now I hear you. Yeah, there was you went out for a second. But yeah, what I was asking you, do you believe that a woman's relationship with her father eventually forms the basis for how that woman views men, the idea of dating and or marriage and male-female relationships in general?
Absolutely. I think that is critical. And I think that is critical between ages of 1 to 7. That's where it all forms. Everything it all begins at formative years between 1 and 7. And, I think it's sad but true. And, unfortunately, it's a phenomenon that occurs around the world. And the reason there are so many men that are chocolate, as there are women, is because in most families, when you come home from school, for example, there's a mom, dad, the kid comes home from school, and mom is busy, or busy cooking, and they send the kid to his room to do his homework, whatever the case might be, right? Dad comes home, the kid wants dad's attention, the kid wants mom attention, mom wants dad attention. So at the end of the night, the kid only gets about 15 minutes worth of undivided attention, which is not really enough attention for a kid. Do you know what I mean?
So
what I'm saying, when your household, if you had more than one kid, right, there were three of us in a kid, there were three of us in our family. My parents were young parents. So there's three boys and my father fighting for mother's attention, right? We're competing. So what do we learn and what do most people learn in the free world, right? We learn that love is something that you compete for, right? That's what I learned. I had to compete for love. Love wasn't just available to me. It wasn't like, I had to compete for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I learned what love is. So am I attracted to the girl that goes, hey, Anthony, I'm available for you 24/7, wherever you want? I go, you're kind of boring. I like chocolate personally. I love it. You see what I mean?
Now, why do some women allow themselves to become, quote, unquote, addicted to the idea of being in love? And also with that, how come you think women talk about and use the word love in regards to dating relationships much more on average than men do?
So why do women use the word love?
Why are they so, basically what I'm asking is, why are they so fascinated with just the whole concept of love? Why do they, because you mentioned in your book that women tend to become addicted to the concept of love. Why do you think that's so?
I think that women, it's an addiction. Love in itself is an addiction is what I'm saying. That it's so it's just so important, especially to women, because what happens in most families is like, if nothing else, the mother's in the household in the worst case scenario, right? For the most part, dad always checks out, right? So that relationship between the daughter and the father is generally missing in most households. Even if dad is there, dad is not taking little Sally home from school, and when she gets home from school and goes, sits in her lap and goes, how was your day? And just talks to her. He doesn't. It's kind of, oh, honey, what happened? He's just kind of doing what dad needs to do, So I think that relationship between mother and father and daughter is really missing with most women. So they need that love. They want to be loved. You know what I mean? So when they get it, it's like an addiction. That trigger hits for them. It's a trigger like we all have that once the trigger goes off, it's a done deal. They are hooked in, and that's the way it is because of the way they were raised, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Listeners, if you want to call in and ask Anthony a question or offer a comment, I see Wendy K making comments in the chat room. The number is 646-478-5710. 646-478-5710. Excuse me for typing in my chat room. A lot of my chat room users, they love to ask questions in the chat room, and I always tell them, go ahead and call if you have a question. But my question is to you is, I also read that you firmly believe that all dating relationships should have mutually agreed upon rules and guidelines in place to ensure that relationship works. To what extent do you think a couple should have rules and guidelines in their relationship?
Really from the very beginning, you should set the boundaries of your relationship. Because here's the way it works, right? in every part of your life, you know, you buy a car, you get a credit card, you have a job, you get a loan, you get an apartment. Even you go to sort of make a purchase, there's terms and condition, right? You sign a contract. You always sign a contract because you know exactly what the deal is. But when it comes to relationship, we just throw that right out the door. In fact, when we get married, we don't even know what the contract is of a marriage is. We just sign away and go, I'm married. But you figure out what that contract is when you get divorced, right? Because now you have the state of California or the state of New York telling you how it's going to go down. So I'm saying that when you go into a relationship, not that you have to be like an attorney about it. You just have to set what the boundaries are, how we're going to agree to disagree. And once you're in a relationship, it's really difficult to reestablish those boundaries because you already established what they are. Yeah. And sometimes we don't want to do that because we're so in love and it feels so good. Why kill the moment with some, you know, conversation about what the boundaries are? But I think that you need to have boundaries as you do with your child, that you should definitely have it in a relationship. You need it.
Okay, we got some callers on the line, so I'm going to take some calls. I also want to say what's up to Dangerous Lee. I'm in chat room, another fellow Blog Talk Radio host. One number I don't see in area code is just a whole bunch of zeros, but we'll see what you have to say. You're now upfront and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my guest, Anthony Miner. What's your question or comment?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Alan.
This sounds like Adrian.
Yes, it is. My question for Anthony is, I think you mentioned earlier in the show that you do not have a daughter.
Correct.
Is that correct? Well, I guess I'm trying to figure out how this whole book came about and how this whole subject came up about the father-daughter relationship when you don't have one to speak of personally.
Well, only because I was dealing with a lot of women, and I would do a lot of coaching, a lot of relationship coaching out here. So in my coaching with different women, which I spend the most time doing, dealing with women, that's where I developed the idea from it, from that, not from my experience having a daughter myself, but just from my relationships with women. And, you know, I have cousins. I've seen my mother. I've seen my grandmother. You know, just there's women around me. So it's not even something that is so exclusive that as a man I couldn't comprehend it or see it. It's just that was just a choice I made to do, to write about this, because I thought it was a little bit more important. And I've also thought that women would be much more open to an idea about a book like this versus men.
Well, Adrian, in his defense, though, I mean, and that is a valid question you have, Adrian, no doubt, because, you know, when you have books like that and you talk about something like that, you know, people are going to always question your credibility. But as you know, Adrian, being a sports fan, there are people who coached college and NBA basketball that never played the game. There's people out here now, every day, in all walks of society that are giving advice in different areas that didn't necessarily, you know, experience those things. Therapists who give advice, say, on rape, and they didn't get raped. So, I think Anthony is qualified if he's had frequent conversations with women, because all women have a father. That was a valid question, though.
But it's a fundamental premise. It's not really something, like I said, exclusive, you know, to understand the premise of it all, that she had to be a father or you had to be a daughter to understand the premise. I have two sons. It's the same premise applies to my sons, that the relationship between what happens between my son and myself, or as I observe my son's relationship between their mother and their mother. Do you know what I mean? Because
right.
I know that for myself, that when I left home, who did I meet? I met my mother in college, and that's the woman I married. Fundamentally at the same level. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. Well, I guess, are you planning on writing a book about the relationship between the mothers and sons?
Well, he touches on that in his book, too.
Yeah, no, my next book is really about a book about men in general, about men's responsibility being a man, and with the mother as well, you know, her responsibility and the father's responsibility dealing with young men. So that's really my next book is about that, you know. It's about men who breastfeed.
What?
It's about men who are breastfeeders. Now, literally.
Man, you tripping me out, dog.
No,
men
no,
who
you know
breastfeed?
Guys, No. Some guys just can't get off their breasts. You know what I mean? At some point, as a man, you got to get off the breasts.
Oh, I see what you said. Okay. See, I wasn't totally grasping what you were saying. Hey, Adrian, sweetie, thank you for calling in. Yeah, man, because, you know, I thought you was tripping out on me, Anthony, because I was going to be like, man, I'm never doing a show topic about men who breastfeed, man. That's just weird as being in that room watching mice and rats boning, man. Right. Shoot.
Yeah, but that was just metaphorically speaking.
Yeah, I hear you. We got area code 404. You are now upfront and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my guest for the evening, Anthony Miner. What's your question or comment?
What's happening, Alan? This is H. Scott Gordon. What's up, homeboy?
H. Scott, man, I got beef with you, H. Scott Gordon, but I'm going to let you go ahead, man.
Now, Alan, you know how we do. Your listeners, don't come and listen to me until after 11:30. You know how we
listeners,
do.
Listeners, you listen to his show tonight. See, Anthony, H. Scott Gordon's on another show on the Blog Talk Radio Network tonight.
Okay.
And he was talking about his show, and, they, you know, I want my listeners going. But he does have a provocative topic he's going to be talking about. But anyway, what's your question comment for Anthony Miner, Scotty?
What's up, brother Anthony? My
How
question
doing,
is
nice
that
to you.
My pleasure. Me being a father of four and growing up and having my sons first, my sons are now 22 and 19, I always thought that the most important thing for me as a male or as a father was raising my sons. However, now that I have little princesses, little daughters, and there are 6 and 7 right now, I see that the male or the father role is even more important to these young ladies. Do you go into that topic on the importance of a father to his daughters in the role that we play because we are their first love? Do you go into that aspect in your book?
Yeah, I do. Because especially with your daughters, it's critical, man. They need so much attention from you. You know what I mean? The undivided attention. Because you know what? If she doesn't get undivided attention, she's gonna be attracted to guys, you know, with his pants down in his butt, his head is crooked. He's gonna come knocking on your door, and you're gonna have a heart attack.
Nah, I'm not gonna have a heart attack. They are gonna have a heart attack.
Yeah, right. But, you know, it's important that especially with women, you know, that they need that you're undivided attention. They can talk and just let it out and you talk to them. I think it's really crucial for women, for young girls especially, if they don't have that. So I think you're doing the right thing by even inquiring about it. But, yes, I think it's very important, and I do touch on that in my book, absolutely.
Well, outstanding. Yo, Alan, you know, I got to go get ready to do my thing, but, you know, I just wanted to shout you out tonight, man.
Okay, man, I'm going to jump over and check you out after my show is over, bold italic letters. But yeah, Scotty, H. Scott Gordon. Actually, H. Scott Gordon, folks, was one of my guests earlier this year because he has a couple books out, actually. He's a prolific novelist and book author. And so check out the archive so you can check out the show where I interviewed H. Scott Gordon, and now he's been a host and co-host on the Blog Talk Radio Network doing his thing from the ATL to ATL. Now, I'm going to ask one of my most loyal listeners. He has a beautiful daughter, and he listens to my show every week. His name is Irvin V. Pulliam III, and he hails from Seattle. If I can get his line open. EVP, you got any questions or comments tonight?
You just
chilling and listening, huh?
Chilling.
Okay. All right. I won't bug you. That's again Irvin V. Poyum, one of my close friends. He listens every week through the phone, not through the computer. But now there's an article, Anthony, on the internet today that says that the Obama Biden administration has created a very extensive, and some are arguing a very invasive questionnaire for potential applicants to the cabinet. Now, my question is, if the new presidential administration wants to know the personal details of all of their applicants' past life, anything that could be considered controversial if it came to light or, you know, provocative, just how many personal questions should a potential spouse ask of a man or woman?
Well, you know what? The truth of the matter is, they might be able to tell you everything. Because, as I say in my book, when you meet a girl and you meet, you meet somebody, you know, and you may be known together for 10 years, 5 years, whatever the case might be, you know what? The truth of the matter is, you're never going to really know her, and she's never really going to know you, because I guarantee you, she is not going to tell her dirty little secrets, and you're not going to tell yours. So are you going to really get to know that person? Not really. Not in the way we kind of describe it in terms of, you know, socially we say, this is my girl, I know her. You know, you won't really know her. And I think that you need to just, when you're on a date in the beginning, you just need to ask open-ended questions just to get a sense of who this person is, so you know you're dealing with. Because by the seventh day, you'll know exactly what the kind of person is. We kind of ignore those signs, but instead of saying stuff like, where are you from, the interview question, like, where are you from, you know, how long have you been doing your job, you know, you should ask questions that are just kind of probing into a person's behavior, not so much their background in terms of, like, where they go to work or where they do school, things like that, you know, because...
Well, see, I have to slightly disagree with Anthony. You said we're all not going to try to... See, I'm pretty much upfront and straightforward, which is where the title of my show comes. I let it all hang out, for better or for worse. And I've had some women say, Alan, dang, I didn't need to know all that TMI, TMI. But I lay it all out there because I'm all about being Mole One. And speaking of Mole One, you know I got to indoctrinate you, Anthony. If you listen to any of my past shows, you know that if the word Mole One is mentioned or somebody mentions the word straightforward, I have a little chant on my show that at least 2/3 of my guests, I get them to say, here's the chant. It goes like this, Mole One. So, Anthony, I'm going to have you say for my listening audience, I want to hear you say, Mole One.
Okay, here you go. Mole One.
Alan Roger Curry.
You're up front and straightforward.
Alan Roger Curry.
Yeah, that's my chant. Mole One. Yeah, but seriously, though, I do, and I'm not saying everybody should do that, but in most of my dating relationships, I don't know, maybe if I told 100% all my, you know, details of my life and dating life, but at minimum, I tell like 90% of my stuff. I mean, I just...
Would you want your girl, let's say some girl you're dating, to give you all the backstory?
Yes.
Because,
see, here's my deal, and I'm not saying all guys should want that, but here's the deal. I don't want to date a woman, and we date for, say, 2 years or whatever, and then one of her girlfriends, I'm talking at a social event, and one of her girlfriends says, you know, Alan, you know, I didn't know you know that Lisa, your girlfriend, she was in an orgy 5 years ago, and I got pictures, you know. I would be like, you know, why didn't she tell me that herself? And I don't want no skeleton. I want to know all the skeletons. I'm a pretty non-judgmental type guy, so it's not like I'm going to go off on like, hey, why'd you do that? Why'd you do that? I just want to know stuff before I hear it from other people. Because stuff has a way of getting out. If there was anybody else involved, it has, whether it's something to do with sex, non-sex, or whatever. At some point, I mean, we know that just from watching the media. Stuff eventually gets out. So I want to know, when I date a woman, I want to know everything. Well, I put everything with an asterisk. I don't want to know if, you know, something goofy, you know. You know, everything that's pretty, that could have the potential to affect the nature of the relationship, let's say that. I want to know everything that would have the potential. Just like going back to the Obama-Biden administration. That's why they had this really extensive questionnaire, because they want to know everything about the applicants in case something was to come out later. They want to know ahead of time. And that's kind of the same attitude I have with a girlfriend. And so anyway, I know I'm a unique cookie. And again, I'm not saying all guys or women should want the full slate, but that's just me. I believe in laying it out on the table, and I want the woman to lay it out on the table. But now let me ask you this.
I'd agree with you on that. I think that, yes, I agree with you. I think it's better to lay it on the table just so you know, like, listen, let me tell you something. It's 68, you know what I mean? It's, you know, in 2007, blah, 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 you know, but you go, okay, I know what's up. So I agree with you 100%. I think that's a great way to be.
Now, Anthony, what do you think to yourself when you hear a man or woman use the term or the phrase, I'm looking for the one, or I'm looking for my soulmate? Are those terms, in your opinion, overrated?
completely. And that woman, if that's, if you talk about a woman or, you know, a guy, whatever, they don't really want to be in a relationship. You know, in my opinion, they don't that's what they really want. They say that, but it's just a way of keeping them out of a relationship, because any adult knows there is no perfect guy out there that speaks French. He's, you know, 6'2", 180, vegetarian, works out, loves kids, you know, whatever, you know, the whole nine, you know. So I think it's overrated completely, and I think that she does not want to be in a relationship.
Because you basically, I read an excerpt where you basically say you feel like men and women who started out saying that they were with their soulmate or they had found the one, half of them end up getting divorced just like anybody else. So, you know.
Exactly. Because, you know, you go, you know, I'm my soulmate, he's the one. Well, how did you get divorced? Why did you get divorced if that's the one? And so it's just kind of a fairy tale type of way to, I think, just to live or to pretend, you know, with couples or maybe with women in particular, I don't know. But, yeah, I think that's a little overrated, that whole thing, looking for Mr. Right and so forth. Because, you know, I always say, don't demand any more of someone else that you don't do yourself. If you say, I'm perfect, then, okay, look for Mr. Perfect. But who feels that way about themselves?
Well, see, you're going to lead me to a question, and I've talked about this on a couple of shows, and particularly since you work in the entertainment industry, you should be able to give good perspective. I have a criticism, and I worked in the entertainment industry as, you know, screenwriter, filmmaker. Don't you think that some, not all, but some romantic comedies and romantic dramas tend to almost create these unrealistic romantic fantasy scenarios that a lot of men and women, and particularly women, tend to absorb and think that can really happen in their life, the whole, you know, kind of knight in shining armor type scenario. And here's my opinion. I'll lay out my opinion, then I'll let you respond. Okay. I feel like a lot of movies, romantic type movies, end up potentially hurting real life male-female relationships because they promote this happily ever after type mentality, when the reality is every person you hook up with, you're going to be arguing with them at times. They're going to get on your damn nerves at times. And, you know, relationships are work. Any relationship,
right,
a long-term relationship, is work. And I don't feel like a lot of TV shows and movies do a good job of showing it. What's your thoughts?
No, I agree with you 100%. We do really fantasize about those things. And in some sense, I guess, you know, it's good because it is fantasy and it takes us away from our world of maybe arguing and things like that. I don't think that it's necessarily right all the time. And one of my favorite movies that and I'm not really into romantic comedies, but that's not really my thing, but I like the movie The Breakup. And there's a scene with Vince Vaughn and Jennifer Aniston arguing about the lemons. Or he comes home, she wants him to clean up, or something like that. That was kind of like a real depiction about a couple. You know what I mean? Like, why would I want to clean up the house, or something like that, you know? So, but I think it is over, I think it's definitely overrated. I think it's a little bit too romanticized, and but women buy into it, man. They just eat it up. So I guess we'll keep seeing them.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that way.
Yeah, because I just think, now, what is your best definition of unconditional love within the context of a dating relationship? How would you define, Anthony Minor, how would you define unconditional love?
Well, I think like this. If a person says to another person, I love you, you know what I mean, and I'm in love with you and I want to love you unconditionally, well, I think that part of it is that that person needs to really do – they need to present themselves as best they can to the person. That means do whatever work is necessary to be the best they can be. You know what I mean? In terms of like their health, their psyche, about relationships, about their issues with their father or their mother or life, whatever they are, you should just work towards those things. You know what I mean? Because if you really say you love somebody, then why not be the best you can be for that person? That's what I think. That's where it comes in, unconditional. Love comes in. Because I have two sons, and I love it. I do love them unconditionally, and I do the best I can to be the very best man and father that I could be. And whatever that means for me, if it means if my son, I work out like 4 days a week because I want to stay healthy for my son, you know, and I read whatever books necessary to be the best I could be because I do love them unconditionally. I was at work the other day, a while ago, and there was this woman. She was telling me about her son. She goes, I love my son so much. Oh, my son. I go, great, you know. She was actually the medic. You know, we have a person who's a medic on the set, right? So she goes, I love my son. Okay, great. So the next, about a week later, I saw her, and she was smoking a cigarette. And she's a medical person. You know, she knows better. So I go, what do you love more, the cigarettes or your son? She goes, well, what do you mean? I go, well, you say you love your son. You know this is bad for you. So which ones do you love better? She goes, well, if I don't smoke, I get angry. I go, still, so what do you love more, your anger or your son? You see what I'm saying? Because if you really love, she said she loves him as much as she says she loves him, that she would be the best that she could be for her son because he needs her, right?
Yep.
He could die early. You know what I mean? Why do that to your son? Why not be the best you could be for that person you say that you love? That means if you're an arguer person or you're a person that's insecure, you should work on those things because you're saying, I love you. And to me, if you say you love me, that means you want to be the best you could be for me as I will be for you.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
That's my take on it.
Now, listeners, if you have a question, a comment, please call in. We only got about 15, 20 minutes left with my guest, Anthony Miner. The number is 646-478-5710, 646-478-5710. And if you're in the chat room, yes, that was my first time ever. I've been doing Blog Talk Radio over a year. That's my first time banning someone. Anthony, you don't know what's going on in the chat room, but somebody came to the chat room saying all this negative stuff, talking about she would never want a black man as a father of her child, and she's glad her child's father was white and all this other stuff. And I just banned her from chat room. That's right, folks. That's the first time in Blog Talk Radio history that Alan Roger Curry has banned somebody from my chat room. But no, you can't come in my chat room with all that negativity stuff. You know, I don't mind if you have philosophical disagreements with other users in the chat room, but if you're just totally just negative, 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 you got to go. You got to go. But I'm going to let Anthony get another swig of water, and we're going to do another intermission break, and then we'll be right back with some more questions. Again, if you have a question or comment, please call in 646-478-5710.
Hey, this is Dangerous Lee. When you are being upfront and straightforward with my man Alan Roger Curry, you should definitely be keeping it dangerous with me and HP every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern by listening to Ask Dangerously Live right here on Blog Talk Radio. Simply direct your computer to AskDangerously.com for your weekly dose of danger. And if you can't get enough of me on Friday nights, join me at MySpace.com/DangerousLee.
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry of Upfront and Straightforward and Mode 1 fame. And if you're a music lover, I urge you to listen to Madison Media Radio. It's not just music, but it is music with a purpose. Right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Celebrating 25 years of the countdown.
25 years of the countdown.
With Walt's Baby Love.
Live in our countdown studios, ladies and gentlemen, a personal friend of mine, Mr. Stevie Wonder.
Now live with me on the countdown hotline, it's Justin Timberlake. Live with me in our countdown studios, my friend, Tina Marie. Welcome, Tina. On the countdown hotline, live, Eric Benet. As promised, my friend, Kirk Franklin. As promised, it's Natalie Cole. As promised, y'all, Kenneth Babyface Edmonds. As promised, John Legend. As promised, live on my countdown hotline, Alan Roger Curry. Welcome, Alan.
The old to the new to the old. The old to the new to the old.
Only for the grown and sexy.
The grown and sexy.
The countdown with Walt Baby Love.
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry, and I want to quickly invite you to join me on Thursday, November 20th, when I have former BET Comic View and Saturday Night Live regular, as well as Essence Magazine dating columnist, Finesse Mitchell. He will join me to discuss the all-important question, who gives better dating advice, men or women? Again, that is Thursday, November 20th, on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
I wish I could.
Now return to my interview with entertainment industry veteran and book author Anthony Miner on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. I've been conversing this evening with Anthony Miner. He's an up-and-coming author, and he's written a book entitled, If You Like Chocolate, Eat Chocolate, Learn to Manage the Chocolate You Desire. And we've been having a good conversation and sharing thoughts and opinions. Now, Anthony, in your best opinion, how much of yourself, and this is kind of similar to a question I've already asked about, I think, about boundaries and whatnot, but how much of yourself do you feel you should, quote-unquote, compromise for the sake of a relationship? Like, I hear a lot of men and women say, well, I don't want anybody who's going to try to change me. I don't want anybody who's going to try to get me to modify my behavior. But then other people argue, well, you have to make compromises if you want a relationship to work. So what's that balancing act between making necessary compromises without just totally changing the core of who you are?
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious you have to make compromises, you know. I do it in my relationships, but I don't think that you should maybe – it should be pretty equal, I think, in terms of the compromising. If there's something that really bugs somebody, then you really have to go, listen, I won't do that because you like your whatever soap or your taste a certain way. And I think you should respect those very specific neurotic behaviors that we all have. But I think that, you know, when it comes to, like, general space, like living room space or whatever, you should just respect that and kind of keep it kind of 50-50. But, yeah, I think it's really important to have that. And, again, that goes back to having some sort of boundaries about how you agree to disagree. So you're going to disagree. The question is, like, how you're going to disagree. And, you know, respect each other's, you know, space and boundaries.
Yeah.
I even do it with my sons because I feel that they should be respected. They're worth being respected. And I don't always have the right way of doing something, so I listen to what they say, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it should be like that.
Now, this is also related to, I think, a question I asked earlier, but it's kind of phrased in a different way. But do you think a woman who had a poor relationship with her father, because, matter of fact, just tonight we had a couple women in the chat room who basically acknowledged that they didn't have the greatest relationship with their father. And I've met women in my life who didn't have great relationships with their father. And it's kind of been mixed. I'd say roughly two-thirds of them had seemed to have relationship troubles in their adult life, but another third, you know, they got along fine. So I was going to ask you, do you think a woman who has had a poor relationship with her father tends to have a significantly tougher time developing good relationship with men as an adult or not really?
Yeah, I think they do. And I think one of the core reasons is that women just suffer from a lot of abandonment-type feelings. You know what I mean? They feel that he may leave like dad did or not available like that. You know, women need to feel that love is available because they need it. You know how women just say, I want to be hugged. You'd be like, what? It's Tuesday. You know what I mean? Out of the blue, I want to be hugged. Okay. So I think they just need that feeling. And so I think they have a tougher time because sometimes they don't really trust the love that's in front of them. You know, it took them a long time to trust. I was working with this girl the other night, and she had a really hard time trusting her boyfriend because she just didn't believe that he liked her. And she still, you know, we had a little session the other night, and I had to kind of convince her that the guy really does love you. You know, he wants to be with you. But she was totally convinced that he would leave and for another woman. But that's just her feeling insecure because apparently, you know, obviously her father wasn't available to her, and so far she had those feelings, you know. So I think it's crucial.
Okay, now somebody asked in the chat room, say a woman as a youngster, teenager, has a poor relationship with her father, but she has an uncle who she's close to, or an older brother who she's close to, or a grandfather who she's close to, can that act as a replacement for the poor relationship with her biological father?
You know, yes and no, because I just think women have that burning desire, like my dad, it's my father. You know, women are very, very, they love their fathers, man. They really need that relationship. Even though grandpa was there, they still like, well, but my father. You know, you see it pretty apparently when kids that are up for adoption and they become adults. They have great parents. You know, the father was a great father, the mother was a great mother. They always seek out their parents. So I think I just feel that bond between a child and mother and father is just so important. It's almost kind of spiritual the way that they just need that. You know what I mean? Just like, it's just like a need that we have as humans. And I really don't think another man could really substitute in that sense for that. You know, even.
Now, let me ask for being objective, ask for the opposite gender, our gender actually. Do you think if a man has a contentious relationship with his mother, that he's going to have tough problems as an adult in the dating world more so than a guy, say, that had a great relationship with his mother?
Obviously. Absolutely.
Because I notice the difference between men and women when it comes to the parents. A lot of women, they love the category or title of daddy's girl. They take pride in being called. Whereas I know there's a lot of men, they don't like to be called mama's boys. That's like offensive to a lot of men. They like, don't call me no mama's boy. Why do you think that is, that difference in reaction in the parent?
You know, the thing about women is that the women are very spiritual and naturally. Not that men are, but women is kind of built that way. You know what I mean? There's a baby comes in the room and all goes, oh, the baby. Guys don't do that. You know what I mean? Dad, cat, or
that's
baby.
True. That's true.
You know, we just don't
hey, you don't hear too many guys say, oh, look at the baby.
You know, and if the game is only like, oh, no, not a baby, you know, because it's going to interrupt the game. But with women, I think it's just from that spiritual place that they have that need to nurture and like that, and part of that nurturing is being thought about. That could be hell, like hold me, and you know, I just said men are not built like that. We're protectors, we're warriors, you know. So they want to be called that. They want to be cuddled and feel like a baby and loved and things like that. And when that's missing, man, it can set up a very, you know, challenging relationship for the future, you know.
Well, I want all my female listeners to know that I love all you guys. I just love you, and I just want to hug and coddle all my female listeners because I just got that much Alan Roger Curry that got that much love for you until you mess with my chicken wings, and I jack you up, man. Boy, you mess with my chicken wings, man. Shoot.
Stupid.
Yeah, I love you until you mess with
but
my
you know
chicken
what, Alan, you know what? I kind of base a lot of things that in my book are based on generalities because are they exceptions to rules? You know, absolutely. But when you stop and just really like maybe some of your listeners or people, you know, just ask them about their relationship with their father. You know what I mean? And you'll see, it's so blatant that it's not generally the exception. It's generally the rule. Those kind of really. What is it called? Those absentee father type relationships are very common with a lot of women, unfortunately. And that's why I want to write the next book, because men have such an important role in our society to be leaders, to be pillars of our community. That is our job. Forget being author or talk show host, a basketball player, whatever the case may be. What is your role in the world as a man? Your duty as a man when you are born is to be the pillar of your community. That's your job. You should lead by example. And if a man leads himself, then so will, you know, he'll lead his wife, he has, you know.
I'm sorry, I keep addressing my chat room. One of my chat room users, Andy, said that she's accusing me of being shallow because she said I only want to share a woman's company if they cook me some chicken wings. That's not true. I eat spaghetti and I eat lasagna. And okay, let me stop lying. If you can't cook chicken wings, I don't want to share your company. Hell no. What for? And chicken wings is life, baby. That's the world's most perfect food. But and let me ask you, most men, a lot of my male friends who do have daughters, we've discussed, you know, the role of them parenting their daughters, especially as they become teenagers, you know, 15, 16, 17. And one of the things they say is that it's kind of a balancing act. That they don't want to be too strict on their daughters because they feel like once they leave the house and say go to college, whatever, they're going to rebel and go out of their way to become promiscuous just out of spite. But at the same time, they don't want to be too lenient. Do you think it's always that balancing act for fathers when it comes to raising a daughter?
Yeah, but listen, here's the thing about raising kids, which is a kind of like a fundamental mistake amongst parents like that. You don't wait till your kid turns 17 to affect that behavior as a teenager. You know what I mean? You start when she's four. You know what I mean? When she's able to comprehend certain ideas. That's what I did with my son. Started at a certain age that I feel confident about my sons being in the world. You know what I mean? That I don't have to be overly protective because I've already done the work. You know what I mean? You don't wait till your daughter turns 17 to go, okay, don't touch boys. This is what boys are. It's a little late for that. You know, you got to get them out of young and say, hey, teach her what men are about, how to behave as a woman, blah, blah, blah. So now she's 17 years old. You know, you can turn your back and go, I know my daughter was raised correctly. So parents that do that don't feel very confident about the way they raise their kid because why are they overly reacting to their kid's behavior, you know?
Yeah, that's true. As a matter of fact, I want to say another guest on my show made that point. Matter of fact, I think it was Scotty who called in earlier, H. Scott Gordon. He made that point when he was a guest on my show that he said, and I can't remember the exact words, but it's to the effect of the one of the keys to raising daughters is you got to raise them from the time they're young. You can't wait until they're 12, 13, 14 and then decide to start instilling values and principles. And he said that has to start when they're like 4, 5, 6 years old. So that's a very good point.
My sons were like about, let's say, I don't know, maybe like 7 years old, something like that. I would make them read the labels on different foods, right? Like when they grab something to eat something, I go, read the label. Of course, they can barely pronounce all that stuff on there, but they taught them to read the labels, read what you're eating. And, you know, both my sons, for teenagers, they're like the most healthy eaters I can think of. They don't eat fast food. They don't drink soda. My son drinks water. You know, they're just very aware of their nutritional side of it, but they taught as kids, you know. So then we'd say 17 and say, okay, hey, stop, you know, don't eat fast food. You know, it's a little late for that. So you really have to get in there early and pay attention to your kids and be on top of the situation, especially your daughters if you're a man, because if not, your daughter will be attracted to chocolate. And most guys don't like that idea. I don't know. I don't know what my daughter's attracted to chocolate.
Yeah, boy, chocolate versus salad. I think chocolate is going to win most of the time when it's up against salad.
Yeah, it is.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think, this is something I always get in discussions about it, social gowns, whatever, with women. Do you think sex is a far more important component to a dating relationship for the vast majority of men than it is for women, or would you say not really?
Yeah, definitely. Sex is important to men, period, across the board. Period.
You ain't going to get no argument from me.
Yeah. Married and not married. And you know what? Here's the thing. You have to understand, this is something that I always get arguments with women about. Fundamentally, women are very emotional people, right? They cry when they win. They cry when they lose. They cry when she wins. They cry when she loses. They love it. They just cry. They're just emotional beings, right? And that's just a need that women have, a need to cry. Men have a need to desire sex. You know, be physical with women. That's our need. We just, you know, all day long, that's what we think about. We look at the girl, oh, yeah, her. But women get upset about that. Women get upset because we have that need. And as a man in society, we embrace women's need to cry, right? If a girl starts crying right now in your office, you put your arm around, oh, I'm sorry, oh, it's going to be okay. And that's the way we are. And I'm just saying, that's just a difference between men and women. Women should really appreciate that about men, that men are very sexual like that. They're very driven by that. So I was at work again one day talking to this girl, and she goes, my boyfriend, he cheats on me, and blah, 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 blah. Well, this whole big thing about this guy. I go, would you be willing to stop being emotional if he could stop cheating? If he gives up his part, that desire for a man to drive, to be sexual, to give that up, would you give up yours, which to be emotional? She goes, no. Women like being emotional as we like being sexual.
Well, I always make the argument because women always say women are more emotional than men, but I always clarify and say women are more emotional than men in regards to relationships. But in general, because, like, say, sports, man, my male buddies, they're much more emotional when their team loses or wins than most women are. Women just be sitting there like, oh, who won? Who lost? men go crazy, man. Like, I remember when the Knicks beat the Bulls in, what was that, 94? Man, I was sitting here, man. I ain't going to lie, dude. I was crying, man. I was hurt. I was emotional, man. I was like, them badass refereeing calls, man. That was the year that Michael Jordan had retired. And everybody thought the Bulls was going to be sorry that year. And the Bulls, man, they was playing their butt off, and they got cheated. I'm saying it on air. They got cheated. They got cheated. The referees cheated the Bulls. Anyway, my point was, I'm getting off track. Men, I think, I've seen men be emotional in regards to, like, watching sports.
I'm not saying men aren't emotional. Nobody said men aren't emotional.
Well, a lot of women try to say that. A lot of women do say that. They say, men
are emotional. Women always want to make things equal. They aren't equal. Women are women. Men are men. Women really have to accept that and stop. Look at women. You talk to women about things. They go, well, I'm not like that, or I didn't do that. It's like, okay, you may be the exception, but generally speaking, women are emotional. I see women just cry. Just like, why are you crying? I just started crying. Guys don't do that. We don't just be emotional for the sake of it. And we don't lose a race. We don't, you know, the guys don't lose a football team and he wins the game and the other person loses the golf and starts crying. We don't do that. Right? We win, we go great. You know? But I'm saying women, the difference between men and women, women are more emotional. They're nurturers.
So Anthony is.
Women always want to make it equal, you know?
We run out of time. If somebody wants to find your book, how can they find your book and purchase your book?
You can find it on Amazon.com, Borders.com, or they can go to my website, if you like chocolate, eatchocolate.com. Or if they want to talk to me, you can get my number. They can call me directly. I love to talk to them.
Yeah, go ahead and get your number out.
My number is 323-816-3151. And I open to any conversation about relationships. I love talking about it. Or if you want to shoot me an email, that's fine too. Either way, I'm available to talk about it. So.
Okay, well, brother, it was a pleasure having you on the show. I've enjoyed you. My listeners have enjoyed you. Anthony Miner, folks, Anthony Miner. And join me next week again as I have Finesse Mitchell. He made a name for himself on both BET Comic View and Saturday Night Live, and he will be here next Thursday. We're going to answer the question, who gives the best advice, just like we were just talking about, men versus women's thoughts and opinions. Who gives the best advice about dating, men or women? Do you think men give better advice to both their own gender and the opposite gender, or do you think women give the best dating advice to their own gender and the opposite gender? That's what we're going to talk about with Finesse Mitchell. So in the meantime, have a great weekend. Thank you for joining me. As always, take care. I'll see you next week.
Tell me a secret.
Oh.
Because tonight I want to learn all about the secrets in your garden.
I wanna read your mind.
beside you. Do what you want me to. All night I wanna hold you. Ooh, baby, can I touch you there? Come on, come on, come on, come on.
I'll take good care of you. That's what a man is supposed to do. And I'll be there for you all the time. Let your hair down. Let me get you in the mood. I never wanted anyone as much as I.